Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast. Get into the book.
On the POV Book Review.
Kaya959.
Oh, one of our favorite features. And on the line with us today to help us review some fantastic selections, Karabo Khuleng is on the line with us today. Karabo, thank you so much for joining us again. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela, and welcome to all your listeners.
All right. I really love your selection. Let's see where we begin. We can begin with How You Are Satisfied. Hope You Are Satisfied. Sorry, I beg your pardon. And that is by Tanya Malik. Set in Dubai. And you know, Karabo, I loved this. I love this because it obviously takes us back. When you think of Dubai now and the Dubai of the time in the novel, a very different kind of Dubai, but really, really lovely introspection. And a moment to reflect and imagine, you know, a particular, especially for those who are not alive at the time, and imagine, you know, that Dubai in the context of the story.
Yes, well, Pamela, our perceptions of past global events are subject to a lot of factors, right? Obviously, whether we were there, the medium through which the information was delivered to us and by whom, this was before internet, so all we had was like CNN. If you were lucky enough that your parents had, you know, access to Mnet or, you know, satellite TV. And
we had it at night, Karabo. We had it at night after 12. There was CNN after 12 on SABC.
But then you're traumatizing our young brains with news of war. I mean, unless your parents, and our parents owned the TV, so you needed to have been very, very crafty to have access to that kind of information.
And so obviously you're speaking to a war, 1990, which was quite a time in that part of the world. And she looks at this through the eyes of a young 25-year-old.
Exactly. So it's on the eve of the Persian Gulf War, 1990-91, when on the eve of Iraq's invasion of Kuwait. And 25-year-old Ria is the protagonist, along with her cast of youthful co-workers at a travel and tour company called Discover Arabia. Take us through their life, their transitory life that is full of luxury and drama, including international espionage.
Mm. For someone who's curious, my sense of the book was that if you're curious, you'll be satisfied. What was your take on the book?
Yes, you will be, because there is an insane plot twist, right? Mm. First of all, because we like tales of espionage and a little bit of crime and mystery, Malik manages to satisfy that craving in terms of searching for an adventure through literature, right? And it also looks at kind of global issues that affect all of us, like economic migration and this idea of discretionary trade at locations like Dubai, where you're getting paid with, you know, in terms of tax-free dollars and other ways in which you can get paid, where it is to the discretion of who's paying you and how they pay you, whether it be through smuggling drugs and other nefarious deeds, or going on dates with particular, you know, gentlemen, overlooking or looking away or ignoring some of the conservative strictures of that society, which is something that, you know, you realize that the genesis of some of these parties that we hear about on Instagram, that the genesis of these parties, you know, precedes the age of the internet.
And I was thinking, you know, for you, Karabo, why this particular book is significant at this point in time?
Well, because we live in a political moment where the world is at war for all intents and purposes, and whether we like to admit it or not, you've got conflicts, you know, in the Congo, in Sudan, in Palestine. We're dealing with global trade wars between the U.S. and those who whom it perceives as its enemies. And I think this causes a lot of kind of existential angst, particularly for young people, mm-hmm. in terms of how they plan their next move in the world, you know. And I think this book is a reflection that, you know, in a way, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And it renews my hope in, you know, the resilience of youth and the creativity of youth.
Mm. This is her third novel, Karabo. How do you feel she fared with this one?
Well, I haven't experienced her previous novels, but I mean, I really enjoyed it. I also, you know, I also wanted to escape a little bit. So, you know, that mixture of glamour, but also
lots of luxury.
Yes. And the reimagining of history, right? Because we know that up until the discovery of oil in the 60s, Dubai was a sleepy fishing village.
Town.
You know, and how and the influence of money on societies and how they come to shape the way that we look at the world, you know, because nowadays you find, you know, countries in the Arab Emirates, for example, being accused of issues of like sports washing and human rights violations of migrant workers. So again, she effectively shows us that the challenges that humanity faces continue to be the same, although in our day and age, they seem to be amplified.
I think it's a lovely read. I think it's an easy read. But I also think in today's our own understanding of who and what Dubai is right now, juxtaposing it to this, I think it's a lovely, lovely. It's an easy read. It's lovely. And yeah, even if you've never read her books before, this is a wonderful way to get into her work. So I would say a 6 maybe. Yeah, give it about a 6.
Give it a 7. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it, eh? And you know, she knows how to tell a story.
She does. No, and the twists are really amazing.
Yeah, and I mean, she manages to be to be literary, but with a light hand. You know, it's not a heavy-handed read.
No. Absolutely, I survived it all. Goodness.
Sure.
Yeah. It is obviously a book that I think is very, very important. It's an African book through and through, but I think we need to also consider the author's own personal history in politics, in agricultural studies, and I think that influences a lot of what comes through in this book.
Yes. So Umme Xolisa Matanzima Josana, those who recognize that surname, she is the daughter of the former chief minister of the then Transkei, Kaiser Matanzima. And she sets us on the journey of her life by beginning with how with her childhood. She didn't grow up in her father's house, right? She was raised by her mother, who was a successful businesswoman despite the financial strain of taking care of her extended family. I mean, she took care of everybody. She ran a grocery shop. She was one of five children. She took care of her siblings, sold clothes to hospitals, to the extent that her uncle referred to her as a masculine woman. And I think that Xolisa certainly seems to have inherited her work ethic. Although she claims that her determination to succeed in life stemmed from the low value that her father placed on girls. And to illustrate this, she talks about how she was forced into marriage while still in high school at the age of 17, without her consent or her assent, you know. And that's where I argue that her father could have not have possibly passed on her determination and her work ethic due to his prior absence. And also her determination as well comes from how she ran away from that marriage, walking 12 kilometers at night in a very dangerous environment, even though she had been caught the previous time that she tried to escape through the betrayal of a cousin of hers, where then the chief sent his strong men to forcefully return her to her husband's home.
Mm. You know, I mentioned her eventually, you know, the things that interested her, you know, agriculture and all sorts of things that obviously became her career position. Because we can all tell stories. We could be in the same room and what we decide to speak of could be so, so different. And the perspective could be so different. And I think for a modern woman like this, who has most definitely seen a prominence in her career and all of that, she could have chosen not to go there. But it was such an important story to tell about being, you know, married off. And moving into a marriage she thought she wanted, that also failed in the kind of way that she narrates the story.
Mm. Well, first speaking to her interest in things agriculture, right? She did her undergrad at Fort Hare University in political science, and her political thinking amidst some of the struggles that the Black Academy was facing under apartheid, a lot of that politics is intertwined with land dispossession, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The politics of liberation is rooted in the land. You can't separate the two. And then her experience in Nigeria also showed her how corruption undermines the post-colonial state, which was a warning for her that she bore in mind when she ascended into political office in South Africa. She also, her experience at Edo State University, which was formerly known as the Bendel State University, Nigeria, showed her how the mismanagement of funds earmarked for higher education could undermine, you know, the academic project, right? And again, with corruption, she relates a funny but sad anecdote about when, upon leaving Nigeria for good, she was forced to pay a bribe to obtain a visa to leave the country while waiting for departure at the airport. Mm. You know, who gets a visa to leave? You get a visa to enter, you know? Yeah. But already, such was the corruption in Nigeria, and I'm talking about the early to mid 80s.
Yeah, yeah. It's heartwarming. It's also hard. It's difficult. It's a difficult read, but it's so authentic and it's so African. I absolutely love this book.
Yes, it is. I mean, you know, her storytelling style is very much like that of our kids' granny's generation, because I don't think because that's the generation that she represents. So it is that maternal kind of style of storytelling, that intergenerational style of storytelling.
Yeah.
So I really believe that our younger readers and the rest of us, especially those who are interested in how we got here and the roles that different actors played, especially those who are not as prominent in our media landscape when we discuss South African politics, the role that they've played in driving forth the agenda to develop our country.
All right. I love, love, love this next one. Our Science Ourselves.
So, Dr. Christa Kulyan writes about how gender, race, and social movements over time have shaped the study of science, right? And this was inspired by when she first arrived at on the College of Harvard campus, on the campus of Harvard College as a first year student, and she had copies of Our Bodies, Ourselves and a magazine called Ms., which was very popular at the time, and you know she was concerned of bra burners and flower power and, you know, bodily autonomy and access to birth control and all of that. But over the years and with part of his, you know, and through her scholarship, she has worked with women, various women in across the various fields of science. And this result has resulted in a very thorough, very detailed book that looks at the role of women in science in three parts, right?
Mm-hmm.
The centuries of exclusion and the persistence of individuals and the disruptions that women have made in scientific inquiry. And then she goes on to look at feminist critiques of science from the 70s through to the 90s. And then she also looks at feminist science studies that come of age through the millennial era, or from the 80s until 2005 or thereabouts, looking at how feminist science developed new tools and built streets of co-creation and bi-direction instead of top-down and in a kind of hierarchical way. And looking at, you know, the so-called science wars in the context of social science studies, and the role of women of color, particularly, you know, in terms of scientific advancements in the global north, how that has historically excluded women of color, and how that has come to impact on how we understand science, and why it's important for us to also develop science in the global south, not just through collaborations, but my argument is from actually centering ourselves as the global south, so that we're not speaking science to the north or in response to the north about existence and how and who we are. And then she also wraps up by looking at the virality or the potential virality of feminist science studies.
Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic book. It's really, really inspiring, you know, because sometimes this is the kind of book you wouldn't ordinarily come across. You wouldn't get these kind of stories, you know, just in J. And I think it's really inspiring, particularly for young women, to come across work, real work, not just what people call fluffy, but real work that women have been embarking on for a long, long time.
And not the short feminist tweets that
yes.
cause a lot of right that spark a lot of outrage, right? Look, to be honest, I mean, I had to badger Krista because I know her personally for this book because it's published in the US.
Mm, yes.
So I'm just hoping that the more I speak about it, the more a local university press will actually snatch it up and make it available to us.
I think Vitz has.
So please, Tamela, put the word out there.
I think Vitz has already picked it up. I think Vitz has, Vitz Press. That's my understanding. My understanding is that I think Vitz has now. Yeah,
that means I got an early copy because the one that I have yes. is in Massachusetts Press.
So, yes,
yay, Vitz Press. Well done.
Fantastic, Karabo. Thank you as always. Really appreciate your selection, and it's been wonderful talking to you.
It's a pleasure, and it was wonderful talking to you too, Pimela. All the best.
Thank you. All right, so the selection is Hope You Are Satisfied by Tanya Malik. And another one is I Survived It All, Xolisa Matanzima Jozana. And our last selection is Our Science Ourselves by Krista Kuljan. And yes, as Garbo said, it was published by Massachusetts. And now my understanding is that Vitz Press as well has picked it up. So these are all available. If not, just maybe send us a tweet. We will always just reach out to the author so that you can get yourself a copy. But thank you very much for making time for us this evening. We are back tomorrow at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.